Shooting it raw?
Yes. Shooting it raw.
Let me know when we're recording and when we're not, too, because I don't know how you work. You're also my first podcast. I have a book to promote. I have another book coming. Photography means a lot to me, but please also, you know, be kind. I did put a lot of notes, but I do know how to speak in a podcast. So there's a 50-50 chance this could go brilliant or kind of like, yeah. Photography is a big deal to me. So I did a mic check. I just bought this for you. Everything is like new. I'm in a hotel room and I did a mic check with somebody earlier in the day. So this is not at all how it was. So I'm a little weirded out because I saw little things going on.
So first of all, really good to meet you.
Thank you.
Really nice to meet you.
Good to meet you.
Okay, now, please take a really big breath. And just relax. We're all good. We're just going to have a conversation. It's just us.
Yeah, no, of course.
Okay, good. Look, my role in this is to, I haven't researched you. We're just meeting as two human beings. Two brains are meeting, are having a conversation. And the easy part is that I haven't looked at the photos, but you sent me 4 photos. They're going to structure the conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're just going to learn who you are. And this is your first podcast, which is great.
It is.
You're in a hotel room.
Listen, man, I don't have a problem telling my story. My problem is the mic check and the tech.
Got it. Well, you did it. You did it. It's done.
Okay, good.
So should we go into the first photo?
Yes, please. Oh, okay.
Okay, so first of all, I have to say Anna Carranza. How do I say your last name? Carranza?
How would you say it?
I'd say Carranza.
It's Carranza, yes.
Yeah. Carranza, so sorry, I fucked up your name.
Do you think it's Italian?
I guess maybe, but maybe I'm wrong.
You're wrong. It's Mexican. It's although I am Spanish. The name is, it comes from a Mexican president from somewhere. I have that in my lineage.
Got it.
It's Carranza.
Carranza. Got it. Anna Carranza. Now listen, the podcast is actually about, you know, we're all given a few seconds of life. And then how do we make every second count?
Yes.
Okay, so the first one I have here is called Sweet Chico.
Yes.
By Anna Carranza.
Correct.
And it's, okay, so it's a photo. Now, is that is this a stock photo or is this your actual dog?
That is my actual dog. That was, his name is Chico. His name is, and he was a Yorkie. I had him since he was like in his litter, you know, we picked him up. So he was a little baby. I had him all his life. And so in response to your theme, I thought it was appropriate to start with him, because he was the one, as small as he is, he's the one that actually kind of gave me the gift of why life is precious, why those moments matter. And so that's why he's there. It's no stock photo.
Okay, so the photo is this perfect beach where you don't see the horizon. All you see is sand, and it's photoed from above.
Yeah.
On the left, it says Merry, and I guess maybe it says
Christmas.
Christmas, yeah, Merry Christmas. And Chico is wearing a dog Santa outfit. Hat.
Yeah.
And it's it's a very cute image. Okay, so obviously it's an important image. And for a lot of people, as a person who has many dogs myself,
okay,
I understand. So why start here?
The reason I chose him is I think there are a few moments, you know, when you look back at life, if you're lucky enough to go in an advanced age and see moments that were like, wow, this was okay. This was it. You know, this is one of those moments. And I had him, like I said, since he was a baby, and he passed in my arms when he was 13 years old. Mm-hmm. And I did not know he was passing. Like he was my boyfriend, he's more of his dog. So that was like his buddy, right? And so mm-hmm. I think I didn't know he was sick. I didn't know anything. And he wasn't acting it. But what happened was I had this very like strong instinct to go home, to just kind of take a nap and go outside of my daily schedule. And I did. And I hung out with him. We fell asleep. And then like, you know, I woke up, I wondered why his tongue was a different color. It was just different. Mm-hmm. I thought he was dehydrated. I didn't assume anything. I think he was already in the transition. He seemed very, very calm. There was no pain. Wow. There was no uncomfortability. But I kind of had the sense, and I wrapped him around a blanket, and I was kind of outside of myself. And I just carried him around. I called my boyfriend, and he was hurrying back to our home. And during that time, I realized it felt like a moment that wasn't in reality. It felt suspended. Mm-hmm. And it felt very calm and very peaceful. And I understood what was happening, you know, but I didn't. But I was very calm about it. And he passed in my arms, like kind of smiling, relaxed, and his head just kind of went back. My boyfriend came running in and they took him away. Wow. And that was the last moment I had. However, yeah, that was definitely very, very intense. But I think it was one of the biggest gifts, because in that, like returning to that moment, I realized that the connection wasn't gone. He was saying, mm-hmm. you know, it's fine. You know, there's something else. This isn't the end. Stop worrying. Don't. Mm-hmm. Again, take a breath, you know, mm-hmm. and I think something in that was a gift that I don't think I ever truly received from, I mean, I might have, but I just wasn't paying it as much attention. And this was just so profound that mm-hmm. after, you know, the first 6 months were surreal, but like, I had this like commitment to honor that gift and that transfer, and I didn't know, like, okay, I'm gonna do these like globe, I'm gonna travel more, I'm gonna take him in my travels, and I'm gonna write a book, mm-hmm. it expanded. And if anything, it's like, no, don't be afraid, don't, you know, just go. And I don't know what it was, but it unleashed a lot of fear, a lot of like these fears or these things that hold, you know, it was just like, no, mm-hmm. whatever it is that holds us back, that is not really there, but we assume it's there. This little tiny Yorkie, like, kind of was like, it's fine, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah.
Well, okay. So let me just chime in. So at the moment, I have 5 dogs, and this is like the new cycle, in a way, of a previous time when I had 5 dogs. And at the time, they were all roughly the same, in the same kind of age area. And my favorite dog, like my dog, was Kafka. And so in my house, we went through this cycle of different dogs and cats. Pets passing.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really brutal. Sometimes it's actually, yes. They don't, you know, your pet or your person or whoever it is doesn't go in a very gentle way. It's like your story sounds mm-hmm. in a very kind of beautiful way, a kind of a nice transition that could speak to you. And then, of course, how do you interpret the experience?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. No. And I think, you know, I came from a place that was already very vulnerable. You know, I had a very, very kind of, my childhood was, I didn't have that kind of barrier, you know, I didn't have. And so I think for a little tiny little thing, like, you know, this little Yorkie, to give me so much strength and power to not let it, to hear those stories about having to, you know, put your pet to sleep. And I felt like I couldn't have been able to deal with that. And I felt like whatever happened with us in that relationship, it almost seemed like he was overcompensating for my vulnerabilities.
Right, right. You
know, and in a sense, how did I handle that? I think it is truly something like you have to say that animals and our companion, our fur babies are so much more, you know, than little like things. They teach us so much lessons. So the things that, like what we're saying right now, what are these precious moments? Well, you know, I had 13 years with him, and 6 months later, I had so much regret not realizing he was ill for the last year or so, and those moments that I could have, you know, like, been, you know, and all that, but that kind of washed over in the sense where the last moments are what mattered, the last moments we had together. He waited. I think he was ready to pass for a while, and he waited for me specifically
to be ready.
And so I don't know how it went through was it gave me so much inspiration that because of those moments, your question is so much more important, because it's like, gosh, it really makes me think, well, at the end of it, when I think about what your question means about what those moments, how do you make them precious? You know, there's so many things we can do to like kind of try to validate and try to like be present in the moment. But when your tiny little pet, when he's in this, like the doorway walking through, and he gives you this one wonderful gift. I think that was, as tiny as it was it carried much more weight and gravitivity than the things that you strive for, those superficial things or those moments, right? That you think you're working so hard for, but you get them. And so it's these little things in life, I think, that gets you through life, that inspires you and expands your horizons and makes you more present.
So just to situate the listener and me and stuff, I know you're in the Pacific Central Time somewhere. I'm in Hong Kong. What city are you near?
Oh, okay, sure. I am near Newport Beach. I'm in Newport Beach right now. Laguna Beach. Do you know
that? That sounds like California to me.
Yes, I'm in California.
So please assume I'm an idiot who doesn't know anything, and we'll move from there.
No, of course. California is where we're at. We're in a part of California that is closer to, do you know San Diego? Mexico. Do you know Mexico?
Mexico.
Tijuana. Yes. So okay. Tijuana. Where the Mexico and California border is Tijuana. Then there's San Diego. And then there's me.
Wicked. And you're in a hotel?
I am. Yes. I'm traveling in the morning.
That's wicked. Okay. So look, Anna, you'll see that the podcast basically flies by very quickly. Yes. I mean, you started off strong with Chico.
Yes.
Merry Christmas. How long ago was this photo made?
So that was about, I would say, 8 years ago.
Okay, sweet. So the next photo is called Tulum Trip.
Tulum.
Okay, so the photo is great. It's an outdoor photo. Okay, so there's like this sculpture made out of what could be coconut palm, but basically it's a human in a kind of weird mask, massive. It must be like two or three stories tall, and it's a kind of shelter, and in the middle of the shelter there is that you in the middle of the shelter seated in. Very nice. Yeah, so the light is very, like, it looks really humid. It looks like you're beachside. There's palm trees. There's sand on the ground. It could be like a beach resort. But what really makes the image is, one, you're seated inside the sort of shelter, which is really the heart of this figure that's kind of opening up its chest. I mean, so the listener has to check out YouTube or check out the website to look at the image, because it's a bonkers photo. It makes no sense. What is this?
Oh, what do you think it is?
I just told you.
Oh, that's your guess? Do you want to take a guess where it's at? What city or what country?
Okay, let's say it's in Mexico.
Yes.
And it's part of a big sculptural festival.
It's not a sculptural festival. The name of that art sculpture is Big Head.
Hmm.
It's in Tulum, Mexico. I would say I'm glad you don't know. It's for, like, I think that's when I went to travel there. I went there last summer. I had learned researching Tulum before we traveled was that the influencers, this is their biggest, like, Tulum is the number one spot for influencers. Okay. Which wasn't, like, attractive to me to go. I wanted to go somewhere private and quiet, but which we did. And actually, we were very lucky and fortunate. Last summer, it was not a time when it was too overcrowded. This is a sculpture called Big Head. I don't know what it is made out of, I would say.
It looks like it's made out of wood.
Yeah, it looks pretty huge. And, you know, It's called Big Head for a reason. The reason I chose this one picture of Tulum, starting with Chico, is, again, I think it started this whole, like, feeling of wanting to explore, you know, wanting to. What I did with Chico after he passed as well is I created those Chico balls where I wanted to do these, it's those glass globe terrarium things where mm-hmm, I wanted to include my travels. So I had all this elevated, right? You're a pet owner. So it's just like the level you have in that, like, year after they pass, it's just everything is so elevated and surreal. Mm-hmm. And mine was extremely elevated with Chico. And so we went to Tulum a few times, and it is known as a high energy vortex, extremely spiritual. There are Mayan rules there. Chichen Itza is there, which is like one of the seventh wonders of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's a deeply kind of, like, people go there for healing. It heals wounds. It truly does have this very high vibration and just incredible feeling of understanding, like, ancient cultures. Almost like if you didn't believe it before, you would think you would believe that ancient aliens are still amongst us.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, over there's a lot of healing. I don't know how I didn't go there for the healing. I went there for a vacation, but the moment you land, you just deeply had a love affair from the moment I landed to when I left. I've had a very strong connection to, you know, myself and where I was, where my puppy, also my other people in my past. Just, I had a lot of kind of there was a shaman, there was a jungle, Mayans, and we've sort of been able to understand that travel isn't just travel. It is something where you can, you know, like, really go and sort things out in a way where you couldn't by going to a tourist location. Or Tulum was that kind of happy place for me.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, travel changes you. You definitely mature as you go. Other things that, now look, I don't mean to jump to a conclusion of you know, either using hallucinogens, or because, you know, some people go to Mexico to, you know, to try peyote or to like mushrooms or whatever it is, or like in terms of, you know, if that's a kind of part of the experience, because I'm looking at this incredible sculpture thinking, ooh, to myself, if I was, yeah, on mushrooms, I'd, yeah, be like, dude, that would be full on.
That, you know, I think exactly. I mean, if I was to do, no, I was in a very like sober state. So it was my birthday that we went there for, but we didn't like,
Sure.
if it was already at a 10 from a 1 to 10 scale of it, just that elevated level, I can only imagine what peyote or shrooms.
So, like, when you tell me about this, like, for example, when you land in a place, so here's like for me, and tell me if this is something that sounds familiar to you. When I land, every country has a different sort of smell, right? And it's one thing to walk around, for example, Egypt, or walk around like Jerusalem, where you go like, okay, this has been here for thousands of years, and you're being impacted because in a way that informs your perception and everything. Now, is Tulum that kind of town, like in terms of the his its historical, you know, like connection to the, you know, the Mexican past, like what's and for example, how much of that is part of your identity?
Of course, sure. First of all, yeah, you're how lucky are you to go to Jerusalem? I mean, that's actually I would love to go there right now. I'm, I mean, yeah, given what's going on, I would, I mean, I would definitely, I understand more than anything, actually, I feel like I need to go there. How is Tulum like that? Oh, most definitely. I think the most exotic place I've been to is Hawaii in the States, which isn't saying a lot. Although I am, I'm Ukrainian Spanish, but I've been in the States my whole life. So for me, Tulum was extraordinary, and holla, yeah, it was it opened my eyes to ancient civilization much more so than my little skeptic mind would have previously allowed. I literally was just like, yeah, aliens, chameleons, it is, whatever. I mean, the moment the moment you go down to see like Punta Laguna, the moment you go to, you just see the jungles, and then you see the pyramids and the ruins, and you're literally like, there's tingles going up and down your spine, and you're like, we are not alone. There's just, it just, for some reason, Tulum feels like it's higher up into some, it's in a different sphere of consciousness. And you see it, you obviously see it. And I was watching a lot of this, like the ancient alien stuff, and I'm like, yep, all this is true.
I
I
love
mean,
it.
at some point you're walking, thinking, I feel like at some point I must have had ancestry here. I feel like, yeah, I was trying to sacrifice my boyfriend at the time. I'm like, you need to sacrifice yourself. That's what we did. This is it. This is a, it's called an offering here.
And just gave him a little nudge off the top, just a
I
little
did.
push, not a big
I
push. Am
did. I did. The guide said, stop it, but I
I
did.
talking to a serial killer? Who are you, Anna? What is this?
No, my body count is at zero. Thank you.
Oh, very good, very good,
Currently, yeah.
very good. So, where did you grow up? Where did you grow up?
Sure. I grew up LA. I was raised in LA all over. So I am native, although that is kind of like being in LA people, it is rare to be like native LA. But definitely, I grew up here on West Coast. So we're in this part of the world. Where did you grow up, Brand?
Well, I was born in Jerusalem, speaking of Jerusalem,
Very cool.
got to Montreal when I was one, so Montreal, Canada, at the age of one. Basically lived in, you know, Montreal, Quebec, Canada. That's north of the US for the people who don't know. And I've been in Hong Kong for 20 years.
Very cool.
Okay, so you dropped this bomb earlier. So this is okay, so this is the point of these calls, these conversations, whatever. Just like I meet these interesting people. We don't know each other, and I just come like a very curious, let's call me a Muppet, okay? And kind of going, who you are, and then depending on what you say, I kind of go, oh, that sounds interesting. And you said you wrote a book. Now, that's not going to go, what is that?
I did, and I have I read a book, and it's a
Okay, for the listener, so usually people come on the podcast, have a certain kind of energy because they have something to say, and there's a kind of a brightness and energy coming from you that's really, really great. Now, you wrote a book.
I did.
You're very welcome. What is the book? Sell the book.
I am going to sell my book. It's okay. So my book is titled, it's called a collection of poems. It's an exploration of poetry that's dreamy and very surreal. It's sun-baked, and it's about a lover's escape to a storied hotel in the desert. There is a lot of desert dystopian kind of vibe to it, and nobody ever really checks out. And it is a tragic, romantic, a love story for the ages. It definitely has a lot of stylized glamour and cinematic quality to it. People resonate with it from various, you know, kind of like that don't even think that they understand poetry. It's kind of that traveler's porthole to an adjacent distorted world. It's surreal and dreamy again.
Okay.
And that was the first book. And it definitely, as we go on, I mean, the book was formed from these experiences that I had that started with, you know, my puppy passing and then me traveling more and then me, you know, realizing, you know what, I have to start doing these things. I want to write. I'm a great writer. Well, so I've been told, but I think though that was kind of like, I was pushed off a cliff.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so that's where the book was shaped.
Well, Anna, okay. So as you're speaking, there's this photo of Tulum and of you sitting on the ground in the middle, in the chest, at the below where the heart would be, most likely where the sternum or the diaphragm would be in this incredible figure.
Yes.
Let's take this moment to move on to the next photo, but we're going to come back to your books. Aw, slightly different photo. Okay. There's you seated on carpeted stairs. You're wearing a sweater. Maybe you're wearing a purse. No. You're wearing the leash is kind of draped under your arm and over your shoulder. And seated behind you is what looks like a golden retriever.
Correct.
Okay. And the name of the photo is Chico's Legacy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about Chico's Legacy.
Of course. Yeah, just like to go full circle on this, you know, she's a one-year-old puppy. Her name is Sunny, golden retriever. As you can see, a puppy, just very, very clearly very sweet and very, very kind, very well trained. And by legacy, I mean, there's, you know, no one could take that away. But I think, you know, in time, you like as somebody that has pets, you know, when you have something special, like the love of your life kind of pet, and you know, it takes a while. And so I think there was definitely a protege, and Sunny just kind of took that reign.
Right.
And she has her own like personality and quirks that are just, I think, that are very unique to her. The way I loved Chico and just had, he had such a strong personality. She's the first dog that I kind of see that, I mean, you know, there's one of each. However, hers, it forms that like feeling in your heart that was like that feeling, that emptiness of that pet that isn't there. And she's definitely, this was the steps you're seeing are the Coronado Dell in the city of Coronado in San Diego, which is a port city.
So are those steps?
Yeah.
Are they soft? Are you outside? Like, what are those?
No, that is the Coronado Hotel. And if you're familiar with the movie Some Like It Hot, starring Marilyn Monroe. So many of these old movies and stuff that are filmed. It's a Coronado Hotel, the Del Coronado. It's a very famous haunted hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Those are steps. Those are carpet steps.
Okay. However,
that area, what you don't see is if you're moving around a little bit more, there's a very dense feeling of ghosts.
Okay.
It's very weird. And if you look it up, it's one of the most haunted hotels.
Okay.
And so, like, we were joking with Sunny. I'm like, Sunny can't tell, you know, she doesn't have that spirituality. And she immediately went to this one spot where it was the creepiest spot and everybody was going into. So I feel like there's definitely.
Did she pee
lot
there? Did she pee
oh
there?
Oh my God. Had she pee there? Oh my God. No, she didn't pee there. Thank God. And that would have, oh my gosh. Can you imagine?
Okay. Well, it's communicating with the ghosts, maybe. I don't know. I have no
maybe
idea.
Maybe. No, yeah, no, I she didn't, thank goodness, but...
Okay, so Sunny, okay, so here's what's, how I, okay, as a personality, how I am and how this comes through and why I have a podcast and stuff is I meet people and sometimes what I do is I shape myself to kind of, to their vibe and their energy and you've got a brightness, slightly serial killish vibe. I don't know. So not very strong, but you know, you seem very nice. You seem very, that's how maybe how you win people over.
Wait, define why am I the serial killer vibe? Well,
I think it's like, you've mentioned a few times in this conversation about like pushing your boyfriend off the top of the, as a sacrifice at the top of the pyramid. I know you're kidding.
That was a joke. And it was actually a joke.
No, but it's more like, okay, but all of that was just silly chatter. But in terms of, if we go back, this idea of writing, right? And you wrote, so more than one book, or how many books have you written?
That was my debut book. I'm writing my second, and which is a shift in genre. I'm doing a magical realism book about Tulum and the metaverse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's the opposite of serial killers. It's actually about lovers, two lovers that are connected and after an afterlife, you know, with one of them. And it's a beautiful.
Nice.
So it's the opposite of being
nice. No, of course. Listen, you're definitely not a serial killer. Just kidding. One thing you didn't mention is, what is the title of your poetry book?
Desert Decay.
Desert Decay. Okay. So what is it that brought, because to sit there and to separate yourself from the world and then to sit down and write is a very unique experience, to actually just say, okay, I'm closing the door, I'm finding some solitude. Some people have that inside them and some people don't. And you obviously do. So why don't you talk about, what is it to be a writer in your brain?
To write is kind of like how to express my only way of expressing myself in this world. I'm extremely shy. Writing is something where for me, I can go into these depths and this levels and open doors that I couldn't do in a way that's in a normal, conventional, like casual, conversational way. It's basically, I guess the only way I could explain it is, what is it to need water? You need water to, you know, like, what does water mean to you? It would be kind of the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, I wouldn't, if I didn't have writing, if I didn't have some form of even being able to journal or just be able to express a moment or just something where I would feel that if I say it, it wouldn't be received properly, or you know, just to have to rethink what your soul is actually kind of trying to articulate. That's what writing is to me. It's an essential form of what it means to be human.
Right.
And I just, you know, it's something that was there when I was from the beginning of time, is just remembering a simple recall. So for me, like, had I started writing at an earlier age in a form that was serious, you know, I think I would have like been further into what I wanted. But I went into other things. I was at UCLA. I went into broadcast journalism, into design, and into other, you know, areas, real estate. But the underlying, you know, what the vital essential nutrient, I think, in my life has always been writing.
Right. No, I understand that. So what I see and you know, in terms of the impulse, so on the one hand, you have Chico.
Yes. You know,
and then that obviously created a big kind of, I don't know, it's a place to start. And then you moved over to Tulum, and now you got this photo of you with Sunny, seated on the stairs, just looking right at the camera. I mean, it's well done, because dogs don't normally know to look at the camera, but in this case, for some reason, you're both looking right at the lens, which is very rare.
Yeah.
So you're, like, as far as, like, in terms of what kind of person I am.
Sure.
And then I look at what kind of person you are. I mean, we're, you know, we see the world differently and all that stuff. So how do you make sense of either your connection with Sunny, or your, in terms of the importance of spirituality and the importance of environment?
For me, I have actually, like, I thought about what you said quite a bit. So what those moments, leading into that with what happened in our last moments with Chico and how to make sense of that and with Sunny, I just think that life is a gift. It's an invitation. If you look at it as a gift, if you look at the moments, then they open your eyes to the gifts around you, the abundance around you, and the gratitude in receiving that will, for me, it allowed me to have my eyes open to see the possibilities that are really infinite. I mean, that's just like, if you, in quantum physics alone, it just starts like this mind altering, just to think about all the different ways we can make every moment different, every moment more infinite, and every possibility matter. And we did start with pets. We ended with pets and travel, but I definitely feel like they're guides that do create this kind of, you know, a choice that we all have. Do we want to go this way? Do we want to go that way? Do we want to stay silent? Do we want to, you know, scream? Do we want to wake up? Do we want to sleep?
Mm-hmm.
I think these are all things that, you know, we have choice. Life is a choice. And so our little pets, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, what we talked about, this conversation, I was a guide to kind of get me into this idea where, you know, there is a responsibility and accountability that you have in all your decisions. And the most important thing is to stay present, to stay active, to stay alert, and to be open and receptive, you know, and also have a great sense of humor, because if you don't, it's going to be a wicked ride.
So this one is called the Magical Colony Palms Hotel.
That's right.
You seem to, okay. So my impression so far, well, first of all, the photograph is made at night from a balcony of a kind of a courtyard with a fountain that's not on, but there's like blue light in the sort of fountain in the water. There's yellow light on the shrubs on the left. There's green or white light on this tree on the right. And there's a low building, maybe hotel, maybe rooms, something. It's at night. Could be the moon high above, hard to know. Magical Colony Palms.
I guess, I mean, the reason I included that photo as a closing photo is because that is the premise of the book. The book is the relationship between the two lovers' escape to the storied hotel was based on the Colony Palms Hotel in Palm Springs. It's a traveler's porthole. It is definitely a crossroads of an era from past that included mobsters and politicians, actors, I mean, not actors, but movie stars, gangsters, and like it is when Prohibition, 1930s, Prohibition times, there was an underground tunnel with prostitution, gambling, all kinds of story activities, and there's just kind of the owner of the horse. There was a famous horse that also lived there. Colony Palms, there's something about that hotel that's different from the other hotels as far as when you go in there, it is truly like sun-baked noir. There's this escape and this feeling of never wanting to leave. It's just a certain serenity and a certain kind of glamour and a feeling of like just lushness that is there that I think the book was very, it provided a lot of this wonderful like ground and material and content that I was able to mold the book from. I'm a frequent guest. I love going there. I never want to leave. And so I felt that would be appropriate to like kind of bookend my puppy Chico to the Colony Palms and how that was what created my book Desert Decay and really just inspired me to do so many different other things. I love going to Colony Palms. I strongly recommend anybody that visits Palm Springs and experience it for yourself.
So in terms of your aesthetic, in terms of like what draws you, like typically we write what we'd like to read, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
So in terms of your aesthetic, in terms of how you write, what kind of book is actually emerging? You know, do you have it kind of well thought out, or is this kind of like more erotica? Is it more just kind of I don't know. Yeah, like walk us through how it's taking shape.
My second book?
Yeah.
My second book is actually an erotic. I wouldn't think of it as erotica yet. That hasn't been included. It's magical realism.
Right.
Is the genre. It's fiction, and it is taking shape more so in the metaverse and more in the Tulum side of things of a certain transition passage between life and afterlife with lovers and how that bond still, you know, not only remains but gets stronger. It's definitely, it feels very good to write. It's also there's a lot of research involved, mm-hmm. in terms of like, yeah, of how I'd like to get it done a lot faster than the research would allow. However, that is definitely like, I feel like I want it to resonate in a sense where it's a realistic take on something that has a magical element to it that could be told now, or it could be told 100 years from now, mm-hmm. maybe not 100, but you know, I think it should have a certain timelessness to it. So I don't know where it's going. I feel the project is definitely exciting. It's very fun. And I think it's just like, it's a lot of work, but it feels really good. I feel very happy doing it. I'm very excited to actually, you know, have a unique voice like this.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that's been bouncing around in my head, because look, I come from the world of writing as well. Like my first degree was creative writing. I've helped write a couple of nonfiction books and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So this question of, you know, how to manifest your creativity, right? So you have this creative impulse. Writing poetry to me is the most naked, like just that's my own thing, is like the most naked expression of the moment, you know, of feeling or of just whatever it is, like just of language. And then a narrative of, you know, like a novel is going to be a real extended sort of story and all. Okay. So all that effect. So how do you interpret the question of what is it to live creatively?
What is it to live creatively? I mean, to me, if it's just personal opinion, I would say to be free, just first and foremost. And that's all, I think, to be free is what all creative people strive for, correct? Mm-hmm. And I think creatively is, it's a wonderful way of, you know, people would say therapeutic. I mean, creativity is different. Some people will form different versions of it. For me, it's to find if it's something that's painful to make it beautiful.
Okay.
You know, to kind of take it through the machine of creativity, mm-hmm. and bring it something gorgeous and beautiful and make something tender and wonderful and bring light to it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my version of it, to not make it weigh down. So to me, creativity is always kind of this, just a machine that will, it's a different variation, but I think it also, it's definitely, it helps the most painful things that right. we go through in our lifetime to absorb that process, that unpack it, and then bring it back out in a way that it's a beautiful, bittersweet, melancholic, you know, kind of a version that inspires
right.
and doesn't leave you sad, but leaves you kind of like feeling filled,
right.
I think. Yeah.
So arguably, if you don't mind, I'll tie it back to arguably the sort of it's one of those funny things about people who have dogs will say, yeah, a dog doesn't wake up in a grumpy mood, right? Like a dog will just be like, every day they show up and they're just like, you're my favorite thing. The ball is my favorite thing. Like, everything's a favorite thing, you know? And so maybe if I kind of impose Chico's and Sunny's like personalities on life, sure. you know, it's like, yeah, they'll be like, they'll just help you turn it around into becoming a beautiful experience. Or so that's just me talking. So, you know, what do you think? Look, imagine there's a question in there.
You know, I think it's that was a brilliant, you know, that's great. Because in a sense, I'm talking about Chico and Sunny, correct? I'm not talking about humans. So this whole conversation, the what I thought of was Chico and Sunny. I
right.
didn't think of my ex-boyfriend.
Okay.
I didn't think of, you know. I think that's I think I definitely put the light on these, like, our little like fur babies and right. how important they are in that sense, where they bring us these moments that are more than these moments, that are much, much more than the waking up and like just being so happy
well,
to see their, you know,
yeah.
comfort thing.
So here's the big question then. Can another human inspire that in you?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, they have, of course. And yes, of course. I think so, yeah. No, I know so.
Listen, you're not being interrogated. This is we're just talking.
You know, I think so. I'm not, I feel like if there's a something, I feel like I haven't given up on humanity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hope that this doesn't show, you know, I've been like my pets. It's only my pets. I love the human. I have not given up in any sense. And I definitely do see this kind of interesting like thing where, for example, there's like Bridget Bardot, you know, one of the most at that time, the goddess of the yeah. planet, right? That like literally shunned all humans at some point and went off and like just animals only.
Right? Yeah.
They're the only ones I respect, you know. And you have to understand that experience to be that overloaded with attention and
yeah,
with,
yeah.
you know, having to be on your game, having to and having that kind of attention. So there's a lot to that. But no, I haven't. I definitely am not there.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely. You know, I just feel that it's kind of where I don't feel that I gave them as much attention that I should have. I mm-hmm. don't, and there might have been a little bit of guilt in that with Chico,
right.
where like there are so many moments where I didn't. I'm like, oh, you know, I should have spent that time with him. I should have spent, And so there was a lot of guilt in the first, you know, 6 months after he passed. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff realizing, you know, there are those lessons that and he was like, it's okay. Everything is okay. I'll be okay. And that was the gift in itself. And so I haven't yet to have that human equivalent of someone, you know, in that kind of extremities. So I can't really give you that kind of comparison. But I have, of course, like definitely I feel that humans are equal of having loyalty and love.
Well, yeah, look, as a person who is an avowed romantic lover of life, laugher, like I'm talking about myself here, you know, so I sense that off of you. I appreciate that off of you. I also know that in our pets, that really evokes these very powerful sort of associations and meanings and all this stuff. Okay. Now, another observation, and look, we're almost out of time here. Is that the presence of magic is something that kind of has come up as well, right? In terms of how you, the words you use and where you put your attention, right? So, for example, the Magical Colony Palms Hotel, right? So why don't you end or why don't you talk about what is magic in your life and what is it? What is the power of magic?
What is the power? And
then, listen, no, you know what? In fact, look, let's just say I asked a question, but you want to answer something else. You answer the question that you think is the right way to kind of bring your episode to a close, because I can only say what I see. And I, you know, there's a playfulness and a kind of, you know, very sweet dance towards magic in how you express yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, what is magic in my life, right? In my life, that's a question. I think, you know, that's a great thing is that it's the power to reverse, the power to make lemons to lemonade. Magic is just basically kind of, it's knowing that you have the power to make the next moment whatever you want it to be. A moment can be ellipsed in your mind. A moment can always be manifested and put away and tucked for the right time. But there's a certain magic and knowing that you have a certain agency, that you're allowed to be accountable for your life, for what you do in the next day, the next week, and the next month, and the next year. And that no one can take that away from you. It's your magic. So for me, you know, you mess up, you get up, you bounce back, whatever, you know, or you don't. That's your choice. You know, if you want to have a bad attitude, but that's your choice.
That's right.
The magic of it is that you get to wake up and have another day and then have another chance to have another decision, right? To make it a magic moment or not. Like, it's up to you. It's your life.
Anna Carranza. Listen, this is it. This was your podcast. You did it. It was great.
Oh my God.
Give yourself a pat on the back. It was great. You crushed it.
I crushed.
Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Ran. It was a pleasure.
Shooting it raw?
Yes. Shooting it raw. Baby, I like